And now it's time for the game in which we ask people who have devoted their lives to becoming experts in one particular area to answer questions about something else entirely. Branford Marsalis is a member of the most important musical family to come along since J.S. Bach and his 87 children. He has collaborated with Sting and the Grateful Dead and other pop musicians. He's led the band for Jay Leno, and for the last decade or so, he has traveled the world leading jazz bands and orchestras, putting out Grammy-winning CDs, and generally being what jazz aficionados call a hep cat. Branford Marsalis, welcome to Wait, Wait.
Is that what they call it now, Peter? Hepcat?
Hepcat.
I hadn't heard that since Cab Calloway.
Really?
Darn. I'm sorry, Branford. You're not standing in 1956 because we thought you were, right?
Hepcat.
I'm trying to speak your language, man. What can I say?
You're doing a bad job.
Now, of course, back in the 80s, when you first emerged as a professional musician, you went off, you left the world of jazz for a while, you were playing with Sting, you played with the Tonight Show Band for a while, and you kind of got some criticism for that, even from your own family at the time. It's like, oh, he's leaving the true path.
It wasn't really that. See, I think people misunderstood that. If I'd said that I was going to leave jazz to go hang out in the mountains of Tibet to find myself, or my family's probably one of the few families in the world, in our country, actually, I shouldn't say the world, one of the few families that just isn't particularly gung-ho about entertainment. So it was the idea that you were leaving this to go be an entertainer, and my parents were like, oh, what have we done? Entertainer.
Nobody's supposed to enjoy the music we play.
Hide the kids.
Yeah.
You know, turn off the radio. But they grew to accept it. It was fine.
Right. And you eventually sort of came back, and now you're doing...
Well, now, I mean, the music we're playing is so far out there, they're like, come back, what are you doing? We're just kidding.
We have a question for you. With all the music around you when you were growing up, how did you pick your instrument, the saxophone?
I was playing clarinet in the orchestra
and
in the marching band, and I was playing piano, because piano was my first instrument, in this rock and roll band. And there were these pianos that have a resurgence now, these electric pianos called Fender Rhodes. And my dad had one, so I would borrow his, and it weighed about 110 pounds. And I had to carry it by myself. And after about 6 months of that, the tenor guy quit, and I couldn't wait to get a saxophone just to get off of that heavy, damned instrument. And it worked. I lobbied. I got another guy who was stupid enough to carry it around. my good friend Kermit Campbell, who lives in Dallas now, and he started playing piano, and I started playing saxophone.
Because the reason I ask is we heard a rumor, and I want you to see if you can confirm it, that that the ladies like the saxophone for some reason.
Oh, man, that's not a rumor. Like, come on, what makes you think that's a rumor? I mean, look at all the movies. I mean, as soon as a guy gets near the woman, what do you hear? The saxophone. There's a reason for that. But at the age of 14 or 15, when I really wasn't getting any girls and wasn't hip to that, I've often said in jest, you know, I had to switch to a saxophone because you could get women with a saxophone. And I will concede that you stand a much better chance playing a saxophone than you do playing an electric piano.
Yeah. But, I mean, just the lack of hernias alone would be...
There you go.
Well, wait, let me ask then. What makes a saxophone so sexy?
I have no idea. It's not that I made the decision. It's just you play and women go, ooh, I like the saxophone. I don't know why. I've just never heard a movie or a show or in real life a person come and say, you know what really turns me on? Fender Rhodes. I just love those guys. Electric keyboards? Oh, the DX7 is just so sexy. It doesn't happen.
I cannot
tell you why, but I'm glad that it's the way it is.
Apropos of nothing, is it true that all oboe players are virgins?
You know, that might be true. I don't know if it's true, but I would understand why if it were.
It is, as someone once said, an ill wind that nobody blows good.
Right. There you go.
I was just thinking about the accordion player watching you with a woman swooning around, and the accordion player is thinking, I've wasted my life.
Accordion. Did you say accordion?
Accordion.
Oh, my God. That sounds like two pianos falling down the stairs. Do you know any accordion players?
I actually do.
Don't introduce me, please.
I actually knew a very attractive woman in Los Angeles, a friend of mine, who used to play the accordion to accompany herself singing Edith Piaf songs, and it was like the sexiest thing you ever saw in your life.
Well, I can understand that, particularly the Edith Piaf part.
Yeah.
The accordion just kills it.
Yeah.
You said attractive, I said, oh, and you said accordion, so, oh, well.
Well, Branford Marsalis, we are delighted to have you with us. In fact, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
I don't care what it is. Get me something for the little brats. Stat!
Oh, goodness.
It's just a few days till Christmas morning, and if you're anything like me, you spend all your time and money buying single malt scotch and comic books for yourself.
Not the comic books, but the former, absolutely.
So what are you going to get the kids? Well, however desperate you are, we hope you do not choose an item from the list of 10 worst toys of all time published by Radar magazine this week. We're going to ask you 3 questions about these toys from hell. Get 2 right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice and their home answering machine. So, Carl, who is musician Branford Marsalis playing for?
Branford is playing for Nathan Neese of Petaluma, California.
All right.
Petaluma.
All right. All right. Ready to go?
Yep.
All right, here's your first question. Decades ago, countless children were injured, put at risk by toys that were made and sold before the modern innovation of massive lawsuits. For example, in 1951, you could have been one of the first kids to own what? A, a little Daniel Boone genuine backwoodsman fire starter set with flints, kindling, and something called magic Indian fire water, namely butane. B, the U-238 Atomic Energy Lab, a science kit that came complete with real uranium. Or C, the Paul Bunyan two-handed, kid-sized ripsaw.
Given my limited knowledge of pop culture, I'm going to have to go with A.
You're going to go with A, the little Daniel Boone genuine backwoodsman fire starter set.
Yes.
No, I'm afraid it was actually the U-238 Atomic Energy Lab.
You've got to be kidding.
With the real uranium?
Came with actual gently radioactive uranium-bearing ore and experiments you could do with it. It also had a comic book that was titled Learn How Dagwood Splits the Atom.
Wow.
No, we looked into it. Apparently, it didn't hurt anyone that we know of, but then again, you know, maybe the children were kept in the cellar for the rest of their unnatural lives
exactly.
After playing with it. We don't know. All right, you have 2 more chances. Let's see if you can get this one.
Okay.
No, that was a hard one. We'll see if you can get this one. Toy guns, of course, always been controversial, but maybe none more than which of these? A, the Bat Masterson Derringer belt gun, which had a working cap gun built into a belt buckle. B, the Kami Killer Army rifle, marketed at the height of the Cold War. Or C, the Ida Lupino girl gun, made of pink plastic, which came with a toy purse to hide it in.
Oh, this is terrible, huh? They all sound so plausible. I'm going to go with Ida Lupino.
You're going to go with the Ida Lupino girl gun.
Yes, I have to.
Pink plastic gun for your little girl.
I think it's plausible.
It's plausible, but I'm afraid the real one was the Derringer belt gun.
Oh, the cap gun?
The cap gun on the belt buckle.
Peter, I tell you something?
What?
I had one of those.
You had a Bat Masterson belt buckle gun?
I did, yes.
And it's actually in the belt buckle.
It is.
So if you wanted to shoot somebody.
You flip open the belt buckle, and the thing goes off, and you shoot the bad guy.
Wow. Or yourself.
If you put the belt on backwards, then you get in real trouble.
All right, well, you still have one more chance, Brandon. Let's get this one.
Sorry, Petaluma. I tried.
Our last bad toy was related to one of the iconic toys of the 80s. Was it A, the Cabbage Patch Snack Time Kid doll, whose motorized mouth would eat anything, including children's hair and fingers? B, the Be a Smurf makeup kit, which turned dozens of kids a bright blue color that stayed on for weeks? Or C, the Care Bear Bear Trap of Love, which had surprisingly strong steel springs hidden underneath the plush padding.
Okay.
If you love me, you'll chew off my leg.
I think C is out of the question.
All right, I'm going to go for that.
So, it's narrowed down to, what were they again?
They were the Cabbage Patch Snack Time Kid doll with little chewing
motion. Chews up fingers.
Chews up fingers.
And then the Be a Smurf, where you put ink on that stays on and is radioactive. And
probably.
Stays on. It's like an offshoot of the first U-238.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And I don't know. I'm going to go with the Smurf ink.
Smurf
stuff.
Ink. Little kids changing themselves into little Smurfs and not being able to change back.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that one.
No, it was the Snack Time Kid doll.
was the Cabbage Patch Doll?
It was the Cabbage Patch Doll. It had a little motorized mouth, which was supposed to chew up little bits of fake food that came with it. I'm sorry.
And the great thing was, Peter, you could use it to save the little Care Bear.
That's true.
Oh, man.
Well, the game was like some of the best jazz. It's inaccessible, you know.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
that's
you are. Carl, how did Branford Marsalis do in our quiz?
Well, he needed two correct answers to win. Branford had no correct answers, Peter.
Oh, man.
That's terrible. I'm so
that's
sorry.
That's beyond terrible.
That's
just
not good.
That's just sorry. Well, I mean, I learned a lot. That's very informative stuff.
Yeah, and you can use this.
Oh, I shall be.
Inspire.
I'll be using it. I'll put it on into my new works.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
A little jazz improvisation on the subject.
I like the other one, the bear trap of love. I'm going to use that one. I think it's the bear trap.
I have always wondered this. My exposure to jazz music is minimal. I've ventured into it a little bit. But I've always, you know, these are all instrumental pieces, the jazz that I've heard. And yet they all have very weird titles, jazz songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, where do those titles come from? Because I could imagine a jazz song called Bear Trap of Love.
Well, I mean, some guys try to use arcane political statements, but a lot of guys are really perverts, and they just sneak some of their own behavior into the titles.
Can you give me an example of that?
No, I'm not going to give them. They'd kill me if I ratted them out. But Thelonious Monk had a song once called Let's Call This. They asked him, they said, Monk, what do you want to call a song? He goes, Let's Call This, and then he stopped talking. So they called it Let's Call This. You know, and it's like there's silly things like that.
Well, I want to see a track, Bear Trap of Love.
You're going to, man, when you do, you know, you're going to laugh.
I am.
It's
all right, man. All right, man. Branford Marsalis is a Grammy Award-winning saxophonist, musician, and composer. He's played with everyone from Miles Davis to Sting, which pretty much is the whole spectrum of music right there. His latest album is called Bragtown. Branford Marsalis, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
What fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.